Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. Good evening. Today is November 17th, 2021. The markets were down today, with the Dow closing at 35,931, the NASDAQ at 15,921, and the S&P at 4,688. Our topic this evening is year-end tax planning. But I want to put a little asterisk on that, because I do want to say it's not just about year-end tax planning, it's about multi-year tax planning and survivor tax planning. So just going to give a little teaser there. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Kyle is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Kyle and he'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Again, our topic this evening is year-end tax planning. So last week we discussed Roth IRAs. There's a lot of tax planning that's available around Roth, but the door is closing on some of that, and so I might touch on that a little bit tonight, but you can certainly listen to the last week's podcast if you want more in-depth discussion on Roth. I personally think that's a worthwhile topic to listen to. I am still surprised at how many people don't understand what a Roth IRA is and how one might be able to invest in one. It's just interesting, and I guess it depends on your own life cycle, your work cycle, and perhaps maybe if you self-prepare tax returns and you may not realize that's out there, or some of the tax planning strategies that are being used. But Roth IRA, as Laura Catanzaro used to know, was one of my favorite things to talk about. It's a great concept, great vehicle, and really a powerful tax saving and estate planning tool for people. So last week, Roth IRAs, talked about three different kinds, and so that podcast is available, and I'll touch on that a little bit as we talk about tax planning. But I want to pull back first and start by saying that you do have to be careful with tax planning. Some people will look at their tax bracket and say, hey, I'm in a low tax bracket. Maybe I'll, take some money out of my IRA, or maybe I'll, recognize some capital gains or whatever it might be. You just have to be careful, because certain people might have what we call a circular calculation. So I don't want you to get hurt, by the unwary. So I will talk a little bit about that. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, tax planning does not have to be just year-end tax planning, but multi-year planning and survival planning. I was just on a call with a client this afternoon about this. It is something that we watch for and think about, and probably should be done much more than it is. I often remind folks when they're talking about their investments or they're looking at their investments. You should not be looking at that in a bubble and thinking that that is separate from all the other areas of your financial life. Recall some of the shows we've talked about, the elements of financial planning. You want to make sure you're coordinating and making them work together. So it's not just about the returns on your investment. It's about the geography. It's about, you know, how you're funding particular kind of buckets that you might have, what kind of investment strategies you're using. So let's just keep in mind that some of our planning can be multi-year and it could encompass survival planning is what I like to call it if you're fortunate enough to be in a couple. All right, so what's our first step in tax planning? Grab your tax return. Get a copy of your tax return. I mean, how many people look at it? Apparently, it really stresses people out. From my perspective, I love crossword puzzles and all kinds of puzzles. So for me, it's a story. Your tax return is a story. It's a picture. It paints a lot of information about someone's financial life. When I look at a tax return, I instantly start dissecting it. And it can be fun. So if we change our attitude about how we face our taxes and face our tax returns, maybe we'll be more engaged with the decisions that impact our tax return. So many people don't want to pay taxes. Although I've had a lot of clients tell me they don't mind paying taxes. They don't mind paying for the, you know, helping to support the roads and education and you know, other types of services and benefits that we are that we get here. But for the most part, people get stressed out about their tax return. So let's turn that into something fun. Let's turn it into a problem solving or a mystery. So what does the tax return tell you? What kind of income do you have? I usually start looking at page one. So that's where the income is. And it's not telling us the tax rate that you have or that you're in or the tax rates that apply to the income, but it might tell us how the income will be taxed. And you have to understand that there's different kinds of tax rates that we have. And if you are maybe don't like engaging with your tax return, you might not understand this. And then that's where you could be losing out on some tax planning strategies that may help lessen that burden that you have for your taxes. And for even people who I say don't like to pay taxes, well, if you at least are smart about what you're doing with your tax return, if you're saving taxes, that gives you an opportunity to do something else with those tax savings, either put more in your retirement account or give more to charity. Or I've had clients who tell me they give bigger tips when they have more money. So you get to kind of see what you want to do with that those extra funds. All right, so let's talk about the income on the tax return. And as I mentioned, the income on your return can have different tax implications. So let's start with some of the basic items. I can't get into all the details because we're not going to have that much time. But we typically are looking at wages when someone is working. We're looking at interest income. We might see some tax-exempt interest income. We see dividends. We see what's called ordinary dividends, which is a total. And then usually over on the left side is a little box that says qualified dividends. And we might have capital gains. And capital gains have a couple different kinds of capital gains, but we can't tell that from page one of the tax return. We just see a total number that says capital gains. We don't know if they're short-term capital gains or long-term capital gains. And what even does that mean? And I'll tell you what that means in a bit. What other kinds of income do we see on page one? Social Security income. And we also see a box to the left on this line item for Social Security. On the right-hand side in our column of numbers is one number. And to the left, there's a box of Social Security that has a different number, and it's a gross amount. And then we might have some rental income or passive income. We might even have a loss there. We might have a rental loss or a passive loss. All of these different kinds of income have different tax rate. Well, some have the same rate, but we can break down the tax rate on some of these and, you know, what we can do about it and what story is this income on our tax return telling us. So as we go through the show, we're going to continue to talk about the income and the different ways income's taxed. We're going to talk about deductions, tax credits, and then some planning. We're going to close out everything with planning, but we're going to first take the mystery out of the tax return. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Marcy Lightwood, a WDIY member and volunteer since 1995. If you find that you must take a minimum distribution from your IRA this year, consider an IRA charitable rollover. It will allow you to minimize your tax obligations, meet your required minimum distribution, and make a contribution to WDIY, our NPR member station for more than 26 years.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And James Johnson just reminded me, of course, the WDIY app is also available and has podcasts of prior shows for at least a couple weeks. And you can also search, as I mentioned, WDIY.org under local programming or public affairs, I believe it is. James can check that for me.
Public Affairs.
Public Affairs. Thank you, James. And also available at npr.org. And you can just search Your Financial Choices. So it's really nice. And that has been available, but we thought we would remind people because they have a new site and it looks quite nice. npr.org. Search for Your Financial Choices. Back to talking about your tax return. And I want to remind listeners of the phone number, 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me or give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in. And James also had put a note, be nosy about your tax return. It's so funny because when I first moved here from Michigan, you know, we're very open in Michigan and, you know, tell our life story in the grocery store. And I used to have to tell clients, I'm not being nosy, I'm interested. But I think it's good to be nosy about your tax return because this is your personal business and it really can have a valuable impact on just your engagement, really. So please don't be afraid of it. And I hope I can take some of the mystery out of it tonight talking about the income. So as I mentioned, we're going to talk about year-end tax planning or multi-year tax planning or, you know, survivorship planning. And the survivor could be your children as well, by the way. So we'll talk about that as we get toward the end of the show. Looking at the income again, let's think about income in kind of two buckets. It might be easiest to do that. I tend to get very complicated and detailed when I talk because I love details and sometimes I probably overwhelm people. So let's think about our income in two buckets. Let's think about it as ordinary income and then special income. Kind of income, which we're going to call capital gain income. And capital gain income, it's not just capital gain, actually, I should call that capital gains tax rate income. How about that? So ordinary income is what we would ordinarily think of, our wages, interest income, Social Security, pensions, IRA distributions, that type of thing. When I'm talking about this capital gain type of income, it's income that has a special tax treatment. It's different than ordinary income. Our ordinary income is taxed at ordinary income tax rates that if we go to a tax rate schedule, it's going to apply just based on that schedule. Capital gains tax rates apply to qualified dividends and to long-term capital gains. All right? Capital gain tax rates apply to capital gains, long-term capital gains, and qualified dividends. That tax rate can be zero, it can be 15%, and it can be 20%. I read a lot of, you know, continuing education for the CPA and the CFP professional certification, and quite often you'll read articles and they'll say capital gains tax rates at 20 or 23.8%. Well, the 20% only applies to the top tax bracket, and the 3.8% is something called the net investment income tax, and that applies, again, to certain kind of investment income over thresholds of $200,000 for single people and $250,000 for married filing joint. So it doesn't apply to most of us. So I think it's a little unfair sometimes when we're reading about taxes and tax rates and how they apply to make people think that it's 20% when that's not the case. Now, you heard me say zero. That sounds like a really interesting rate. Zero. Most people would like to pay zero. When does that apply? That applies to these qualified dividends, which I'll describe in a minute, and these long-term capital gains if you're in the 12% tax bracket. So if you're single or married filing joint and you're in the 12% tax bracket or lower, then the capital gains tax rate that applies to qualified dividends and long-term capital gains is zero. All right. If you're in a higher tax bracket, and your ordinary income is more than that 12% bracket, then you're going to pay 15% on your capital gains or your qualified dividends, long-term capital gains. I have to differentiate long-term capital gains or qualified dividends. If you're kind of cross the threshold, so you might have someone who has $20,000 of taxable ordinary income, but they could have $100,000 long-term capital gain. Well, the 12% bracket, you know, is almost $81,000 for married filing joint. So from 20 to 81,000, that piece, that 12% bracket, if all the rest of my income is long term, that piece of it is going to be at zero. So in my story here, I had 20,000 of ordinary income. I have $100,000 of long term capital gains, so 120. And up through 80, that's 60,000 at zero, and my other 60,000 would be at 15%. All right, so the capital gains tax rate can, a sliding scale, depending on what tax bracket you're in. I don't think a lot of people understand this. In fact, some people think that if you tell them they're in the 22% tax bracket, they think all of their income is taxed at 22%. And that is not the case either. We have tax brackets. We have tax, thresholds. So, for example, single people are in a 10% tax rate up to $9,950. Then from $9,950 to $40,000, it's 12%. From $40,000 to $86,000, it's 22%. From 86 to 164 is 24, and it goes on up like that. They're like tiers. So it's not that you just look at that bracket and say, that's my rate. I wish I knew the word. I can't think of it. It's like a cake, a layered cake or something. So a tiered, a pyramid. So the rates are applied at each level, each threshold. Okay, so if you can visualize that, and for married filing joint, it's basically double that. And then the ordinary rates, if you're in the 12% bracket or lower, it's kind of a combination of 12 and 10. And if you have long-term capital gains or qualified dividends, they're zero. So when we look at page one of your tax return, and I'm talking about looking and understanding what kind of income you have on your return, it might not be totally transparent. Because as I mentioned, that line item for capital gains, it will have a number there, but you can't tell by looking at page one if it's long-term or short-term. Then you have to flip through a few pages and go to Schedule D, D as in David, because that's where we report our capital transactions, our sales of our investments, or sales of that piece of property you were holding on to and thought you were going to make a lot of money on it. And that happens sometimes. So those are reported on Schedule D, and there's supporting schedules to Schedule D called 8949s, and you have to break it down into short-term and long-term, and depending on how it gets reported. So when you see that capital gain line item on page one, don't assume it's long-term capital gains. It might be short-term capital gains, and those are taxed at ordinary rates, just like your wages and interest and Social Security and IRA distributions and pensions and rental income. So you have to understand all that, the difference between ordinary income and capital gains. Now, when we talk about tax planning a little bit later, this is where I'm saying you have to be careful for the unwary, because you might be making some of your income taxable that might otherwise would have been taxed at zero. And I'll talk about what that looks like as we go through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about tax planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. And I love questions. It's my favorite part of the show. I think it's really what drives me to come here. I love the questions. So in talking about the tax return, I want people to get comfortable with the tax return, because hopefully over time it'll help benefit you. It becomes a problem solving. It becomes a puzzle. Maybe people don't like that, but this is about your own financial well-being. So let's dip our toe in the water and understand and look at our tax return and see what that ordinary income is. What else is the tax return telling me when I look at it? If I see wages, the next thing I want to do is I want to ask, are you contributing to a 401k? Do you have an employer plan? If you have an employer plan, let me see that W-2. The W-2 tells me how much you're contributing to the employer plan. We're looking for a code D, and we want to see, does it make a difference if you contribute more or less? What kind of tax bracket are you in? If your plan offers the designated Roth, which I talked about last week, because if you're in a low tax bracket, maybe you'd benefit from doing the designated Roth. Maybe you're in a very high tax bracket and you would benefit from doing a pre-tax contribution to the retirement plan to get the deduction on your federal tax return. That would lower your income. So that's what I'm looking at for wages. I want to see what opportunities do we have with the wages. Is there an employer plan? Is there not? If there's not an employer plan, the next question is, does someone have an individual retirement account or a Roth IRA that they could contribute to? And whether or not someone makes a pre-tax contribution to a traditional IRA or a post-tax contribution to a Roth IRA really is about looking at your income, your tax bracket, and, you know, seeing where it makes sense to, you know, do that. If you're in a high tax bracket, obviously tax deferral kind of helps. So that's when we like the deduction on the tax return, because it helps us defer taxes when we're in a high tax bracket. And hopefully then when we're in retirement, we're in a lower tax bracket and we're taking money out of our taxable IRA then. If we're in a very low tax bracket today, we might do an after-tax contribution to a Roth because we don't need the deduction because we're in a low tax bracket. And the beautiful thing about a Roth IRA is you can always take out your original contributions. So that's really nice because you didn't pay tax on those. But you can let that grow tax-free. And that is also an estate planning tool. So we'll talk about that as we go through here. If I see tax exempt on the tax return, tax exempt interest, some people think, oh, that's great, I'm saving taxes on it. But, you know, net after, you know, the returns after taxes, are you really better off? If you only have, you know, 1% return on a municipal bond fund and it's therefore tax exempt, and maybe it's a state one, so you get tax exempt for federal and tax exempt for PA, but you're not making any money on the fund, then maybe that isn't really, you know, such a good tax planning, because net after tax, if you're not making as much money, you know, is that really a good decision? So you have to kind of weigh these things and look and see if it makes sense. The other item I look for right away are the dividends. So if I look on a tax return and I see high interest income and no dividends, that tells me I have a very conservative investor because they might be putting all their money in the bank and not investing in, you know, the market. Maybe they're very afraid or shy of the market, or it could be that they have all their investments in their retirement accounts, and maybe that's where they do their more aggressive investing. But when I look at it, if I see a high interest income, especially in today's environment with hardly any interest, that tells me that someone might have a lot of money in the bank if they get a big chunk of interest. And is that the smartest way to save money on taxes, because the interest is taxed at ordinary income tax rates, whereas if I had that maybe invested, and again, this is an educational show, it depends on everyone's personal situation. I'm not recommending someone go do one thing or another. I'm just explaining what I'm looking at on the tax return and what the story that it's telling me, that if in lieu of having that money sitting in the bank, earning hardly any interest, would their financial situation allow them to still have their emergency reserve, the funds they need for, you know, big expenditures, that they could then use some of that cash to invest at more tax-favored tax rates? So typically when we talk about being in the market, if we're thinking about equity exposure, that's where we are hoping for the returns on our investment with dividends. And typically those dividends, especially, you know, domestically, those dividends will be considered qualified dividends. And the qualified dividends qualify for the lower tax rate. So is there a way to shift how we're investing, put more of our conservative investments possibly in our retirement accounts that will pay out ordinary income that will be taxed as ordinary income, and shift kind of our non-retirement monies into something that will grow for us a little bit, but also give us that tax-favored treatment with the qualified dividends? Now, sometimes people will think they're invested and get dividends because it's reported as a dividend on their tax return. So when I see a dividend of, you know, from a mutual fund or some brokerage statement, a 1099 that says dividends of $10,000 and qualified dividends of $500, well, that also tells me that person is a very conservative investor, because even though these mutual funds might be paying out dividends, they're probably have, and especially in that case, my extreme example to demonstrate this, is you're invested in fixed income within those mutual funds. So bond mutual funds might pay out a dividend, but it really is ordinary income and doesn't qualify for the lower tax rate. Your tax document will tell you if it's a qualified dividend or not, but just because you're getting a dividend doesn't mean it's tax favored. So here again, we're trying to take the mystery out of the tax return to do planning. Don't think just because you have a dividend, it's a lower tax rate. You want to look for the difference between ordinary dividend and qualified dividend. The other thing that people have not realized sometimes is the ordinary dividends is the total. The qualified dividend is what part of it qualifies for a lower tax rate. Some people think it's you add those together. So if my ordinary dividends are $10,000 and my qualified dividends were $500, my total dividends still were only $10,000. It was just that $500 of that qualified for a lower tax rate. All right. So these are the mysteries of the tax return that we're trying to unpackage here. Capital gains, I already talked about those, that you have to look at Schedule D to see what those are. The other ordinary income we have on our tax return is Social Security. Remember how I told you there's a couple boxes. So we have the column on the right that totals all the taxable income, and then there's these, you know, indented boxes over on the left. And Social Security, it will always be two different numbers typically. And the one on the left is big, and the one on the right might be blank. It might be some version of that total amount. It's never going to be more than 85% of the gross amount shown in that box on the left. So we'll talk about what that is and what that means when we're looking at planning and ordinary income. And when I talked about sometimes our income can be zero tax when we come back from our halfway point. If you have questions, now's a great time to call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give the question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me, and we'll do our best to answer it. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It is 6:30. We have 47 degrees and a few clouds in the sky. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, patchy fog, low 41. Thursday morning, patchy fog, then a chance of showers, high 67. Showers likely Thursday night, low 36. And sunny skies return Friday with a high of 47. WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station since 1995. Many choices, real voices. And speaking of real voices, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, James. Welcome back, folks. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and you can stream live at WDIY.org or on the WDIY app, and podcasts of prior shows are also available either at WDIY.org under Public Affairs or at NPR.org. Just search Your Financial Choices. We are talking tonight about tax planning. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. Or if you want to talk live on air, you can certainly do that as well. I love doing tax work. So, I mean, I was all excited about this show tonight, and no one's calling and asking any questions. I hope you're all learning. I hope that you're taking notes and writing things down, because this is really valuable information in my humble opinion.
They're too busy on the WAP.
Yes, there you go. So let's break down this Social Security issue I was talking about in circular calculations. Be careful. Don't get hurt by the unwary is what I like to call it. So Social Security gets taxed based on how much income's on your tax return. So the more income that's on your return, chances are there's more likelihood that some of your Social Security will get taxed. For people who only have Social Security, it's not going to be taxable because they have no other income. So as we add more income to the tax return, it may or may not impact Social Security. It all depends on how much we add. So this is a piece that I'd like people to really, really pay attention to, because if you look at your taxable income and you say, oh gosh, Lori was talking about those ordinary rates, and if I'm in the 12% bracket up to $80,000, I might be able to take some of these long-term capital gains and get them taxed at zero. So you throw, you know, $40,000 on your tax return, and lo and behold, whoops, we forgot your Social Security wasn't getting taxed. And now we add $40,000 to our tax return. Guess what happens to your Social Security? Circular calculation, all of a sudden, more of our Social Security gets taxed. So we run through these illustrations. I had an example where someone was considering doing a Roth conversion. Well, when I added $10,000 to their tax return for a Roth conversion, an IRA conversion to a Roth, it actually put $18,500 on their tax return, because Social Security income that they had wasn't taxable until, or part of it wasn't taxable until I added that $10,000, and then it made it taxable. So that completely changes the effective tax rate on that $10,000. So if I'm in a 12, and I don't remember the case of what it was, let's pretend it was the 12% bracket, and I added $10,000. You might think you're only going to pay $1,200, but it actually added $18,500. So the tax, and I'm going to make this up, was, you know, $2,400. So we don't want to increase someone's tax on what could be zero taxable income, unless we have to, or there's other reasons and other planning considerations that we, you know, factor in. So you just want to be careful what you're doing. I think doing a projection is key for some of these circular calculation types of events. If you already know that 85% of your Social Security is included, now we're really talking, because we already know we hit that cap. It doesn't matter if I add more income, that's stuck. So now I want to look and say, how much more can I add to maybe play the 22% tax bracket? Why would I want to do this? Why would I want to, you know, pay tax on a conversion from an IRA to a Roth IRA and pay tax if I don't have to? Remember at the beginning of the show, I said deferral, deferral, tax deferral is really king and queen. And it's, you know, allows people to amass a lot of wealth, like in their retirement accounts, through deferral. Well, you know, one thing we know, if nothing changes with our tax code as it is today, if nothing changes in 2026, we will have a sunset of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And when that sunsets, we will go back to the old tax rates and the old tax, you know, structure. And those rates were higher. So we do know that tax rates are set to go higher even if nothing else gets done. Now, we also know that there's been a lot of consideration about raising taxes, but we've been told if, for example, a married filing joint couple making less than $400,000, that we wouldn't expect that the tax rates would change. If that's the case, then maybe most of us don't have anything to worry about. Maybe tax rates will stay the same. So then why would I do a Roth conversion? Well, they might stay the same for you if you're a married couple, or, you know, if you're single, the tax rates might stay. But if you are a couple and one of you passes away, the survivor now has a single filing tax rate. And if they are inheriting your retirement accounts and you have required minimum distributions, they will be taking out a higher amount. They step into the higher of the two Social Security, if that's the case. So you might have a survivor who actually steps into a higher tax bracket than you would have had as a married filing joint couple. What if you're not married? Maybe you're single. And you say, well, Lori, what gives then? You know, married doesn't matter. Well, maybe you have children. And even if you're married filing joint, you may have children. Not everybody's fortunate enough to have them. But if you do, quite often I have people come in and say, we really would like to leave something to our children, leave some asset. Some people say, I don't want to leave anything, but some people want to leave something. Well, then that's survivorship planning. It's not just survivorship planning for a surviving spouse. It could be survivorship planning for your children. Because under the Secure Act of 2019, they accelerated the distribution schedule for retirement accounts for non-spouse beneficiaries. There's some exceptions, but basically for non-spouse beneficiaries, the required minimum distribution has been accelerated to 10 years. If your children at the time you pass away might still be working and in their highest earning years, 45 to 65, they could be forced into taking, well, they're not forced into it, it's required that they take their required minimum distribution from the IRA that they've inherited over 10 years. Sometimes it works out that they coordinate it with the year they retire, and then the next year they have absolutely no income, and then they could take the whole required minimum distribution for the 10 years worth of IRA all at once, because they do give us flexibility in you know, managing the distribution of that IRA. But what you're in essence doing is almost gifting your children the tax cost today. You're paying the taxes on it today, and providing a tax-free investment through the Roth. And if indeed, and I said about 10 years, if you don't do it, I hope I didn't mix that up. If you don't do the Roth conversion, you're giving the kids an IRA, and that's when they could be in a very high tax bracket. If you convert, you've converted, you've paid the tax, it's like a gift for them, and you're giving them a tax-free vehicle. And guess what? There's a 10-year distribution on that too, but why would anyone take it out before 10 years unless they absolutely needed it? Because you can let that grow for another 10 years tax-free, and that would be, you know, the idea. Let your Roth IRA, your inherited Roth IRA grow even longer for 10 years tax-free. Prior to the Secure Act of 2019, there was a required minimum distribution on Roth IRAs for non-spouse beneficiaries as well. If you're the owner, there's not a required minimum distribution, but if you inherited a Roth, you had to start taking it out. So this actually helps people that you could wait at least 10 years. But, you know, if you would have been able to stretch it out sometimes 30 years if you were a survivor, but it still works. So there's a lot of tax planning opportunities that we could take care of when we're looking at the tax return. So page one, we're looking at the income. I mentioned ordinary. I mentioned capital gains tax rate income. I mentioned the circular calculation of Social Security about being kind of focused in if you add more income to the return, whether it's taking, you know, capital gains or taking IRA distributions or doing IRA conversions. Just be really aware of that circular calculation and how it might impact any taxable Social Security. And it also could impact that zero tax rate application to long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. Sometimes people will be in the 12% tax bracket, and if I can get their capital gains at zero versus 15%, I might not do a Roth conversion in that year. If I can get something at zero instead of 15, then that's quite attractive as well. So looking at the tax return, talking about the income, different kinds of income, rental income, I'm going to skip over that just so I have time to talk about some of the other items I want to, but there is also passive losses that may get freed up. And let me just touch on that for a moment. For people who may have had rental properties in the past and maybe you had losses on those and they weren't allowed because your income was too high, they get suspended. Passive losses get suspended if you make too much money and you don't have other passive income. And I'm telling this in a very simple way. When you go to sell the property in a complete 100% entire disposition, those passive losses get freed up. And you want to make sure in tax planning that if you are someone who has those on your books, that you're also thinking, you know, about that. Because if you have no income and you sell your investment property after you've retired, you say, oh, you know, I'm all done. I'm 62. I'm retiring. I don't have any money on my tax, you know, my tax return. I don't have wages. I don't have Social Security yet. I don't have a pension. I'm using cash out of the bank to fund my cash flow, but I'm going to sell my rental property. Now you have this big, huge loss and you hardly have any income to offset it. Might not have been the smartest move. Maybe you want to sell those positions that have suspended large passive losses in years that you have big income because it's ordinary and the passive losses offset ordinary income. Very different than a capital loss. A capital loss offsets other capital gains first, and to the extent your capital losses exceed your gains, you get to use $3,000. It's limited to that $3,000 on page one, and the rest carry forward indefinitely. But those passive losses, once those suspended ones get freed up in an entire disposition, that gets freed up all at once, and it's, you know, a great deduction against ordinary income. All right. If you all could see what's in my brain. So then deductions. We also want to look at the tax return for deductions. We have $600 above the line deduction for 2021 for charitable giving. In 2020, it was $300. And this year, it's $600. If you have charitable gifts to nonprofits, 501c3, and they're monetary, not Salvation Army, Goodwill, those don't count toward this $600, but monetary donations, such that if you made a contribution to WDIY during their recent pledge drive, or if you missed it and could still do it, nothing's stopping you. You don't have to do giving just during the pledge drive. You can do it any time of the year. You would get a deduction up to $600 for nonprofits because WDIY is a 501c3. So up to $600 you can take above the line, meaning you get that deduction. Years and years ago, it used to be that way. Then they took it away. It was only an itemized deduction, but they did bring back, just through the CARES Act, temporary for 2020 and 2021, up to $600. Other kinds of deductions we see on the tax return: qualified business income deduction. That's if you have qualified business income, such as Schedule C income or rental income. Certain deductions around that, that's pretty complicated, but generally available to most people, unless your income is too high. Then, of course, we have the standard deduction. If you don't itemize, if you itemize, meaning you have like high mortgage interest, high charitable giving, really high medical, then you could itemize your deductions on Schedule A. We're looking for those, that kind of information when we're doing tax planning. And as I mentioned earlier, deductible IRAs, solo 401k, if you're self-employed, we want to get you a deduction for making contributions to a retirement plan, self-employed health insurance, half the self-employment tax, health savings accounts. That can be done individually or through the employer. It's best to do it through the employer. If you don't have an employer, you can still do health savings accounts outside of that if you have a qualified health, high deductible health plan and aren't on Medicare. Folks, we are going to finish up talking about the tax returns and planning ideas when we come back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about tax planning. And podcast of this show will also be available probably in the next few days on WDIY.org under Public Affairs Programming. Just scroll down looking for your financial choices. We are talking about tax planning that typically we think of year-end tax planning. I'm saying it's multi-year planning. And what I meant by multi-year planning was referring back to kind of trying to see how what your income is from year to year. I mentioned sometimes you're making a lot of money in wages and maybe a pre-tax contribution would be better. And maybe you're not making as much money, you're just starting out, maybe a Roth IRA or a designated Roth would be better. So multi-year, you have to revisit your tax return each year, have a little party, sit with your tax return each year and kind of say, what has changed? What opportunities do I see? What else can I do with my return? What can I do better next year? If you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810. Questions can also be submitted through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. When we talked about the different kinds of income, we talked about circular calculations. That also impacts sometimes the deductions that we can take. And as I mentioned, that passive loss, if you have rental properties and you have a passive loss, I said sometimes they're suspended if your income is too high. Well, if your income falls below a certain threshold, then some of those suspended passive losses could get freed up. If you didn't think about that, then you might end up using up some of those passive losses when you wished you wouldn't have. Maybe your income fell 1 year accidentally, you know, you whatever might have happened. You took a leave from your job for a bit. You might want to think about what else you can do. For example, you might want to put more income on your return. If you put more income on your return, then that passive loss might go back away. Why would I do that? Well, if I want to save that passive loss for maybe a year that I expect higher income, like if I'm going to sell the property in the next year. So you might be careful. How would I put more income on my return? Well, I might look to my portfolio to see if there's gains that I can take or should take. Maybe I need to kind of whittle down some holdings that got too big, or maybe I could do an IRA conversion. So we can do IRA conversions still. I think some people think that you can't do conversions to Roth, but they are still allowed. What they've been talking about doing is eliminating the ability to do what's called a backdoor Roth IRA. So if you are someone who does that now, this might be the last year you get to do it. And the backdoor Roth IRA is for people who make too much money to contribute to a Roth, but you are always allowed to do an after-tax contribution to an IRA. That's been around for a long time. After-tax contribution to an IRA. And then typically for people who don't have any other IRAs, this works out pretty well because then you have bases in your IRA and you convert it to a Roth and you don't pay any taxes. For people who have other IRAs, the IRS looks at your IRAs all as one, no matter how you hold them or where you hold them. And now you're talking about a prorated tax consequence on any conversion. So that's why the backdoor Roth IRA works really well for people who don't have other IRA money. So you make an after-tax, non-deductible IRA contribution and convert it shortly thereafter. What else are we looking for on the tax return? Tax credits. And this is why we want to understand the income on page one of our tax return, because it could impact the tax credits. And here's where some of the planning comes in. So tax credits such as foreign tax credits, that's pretty easy because typically if your foreign tax credit on your investments, which you see on your 1099 from your broker, typically the foreign tax credits are usually, you know, under $600 for most of us. You don't even have to file a Form 1116. That's where we report the foreign tax credit to take on our tax return. But we can elect out of having to do that. And in electing out of doing it, we avoid that horrible schedule. It's just a horrible schedule. We can avoid it and we just get the full credit. If our foreign tax credit is more than $600, then we do have to complete the Form 1116. But those foreign tax credits are pretty nice sometimes. So you don't want to miss out on taking those. Don't ignore them or avoid them because you don't understand what it is on your 1099. I betcha some people probably just don't bother with it, but it is worth bothering with because sometimes they can add up. Education credits. Here's where we talk about looking at the tax planning, because education credits typically are based on your income thresholds. So the availability of education credits, if that applies to you, will depend on how much other income you have on your tax return. The kinds of education credits that are available are tuition and fees deduction, student loan interest deduction. There is education savings bond interest exclusion, but I don't think I've ever even seen anybody do that. The lifetime learning credit and the American Opportunity Credit. It's the American Opportunity Credit that is really the big one. So if you pay out of pocket at least $4,000 for qualified education expenses, such as tuition, you could get a $2,500 tax credit. That's a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. But there's income limitations. Typically, you know, think married filing joint, $160,000 or less, single, head of household, qualifying widow, under $80,000 could qualify for these credits for your dependents that you have that you're paying education costs for. So American Opportunity Credit is a really big thing. What's really sad for me, and there is a phase out between $160,000 and $180,000 married filing joint and $80,000 to $90,000 for single. But what upsets me a little bit is if someone, for example, comes in, they show me their tax return, they have these education, you know, qualified expenses they've paid, and I look at their tax return and their income's $180,000. And usually we're talking about page one income, not your taxable income. So you also have to be careful there. I should have pointed that out sooner. Page one income, very different than taxable income, because a lot of the credits, a lot of the stimulus payments, a lot of the benefits are based on page one adjusted gross income, AGI, they call it. And sometimes it's modified. So you have to be careful what other kinds of attributes of whatever it might be you're trying to plan around might include tax-exempt income, for example. So the American Opportunity Credit, what's hard for me is when I have someone who comes in who has these qualified education expenses and their page one income is $181,000 in my story. I'm using 2020 numbers, by the way. Let's say it's $181,000 and I look at their their W-2, and they made money, and they didn't put any money in their 401k. And I think, doggone it, if we had put some money in that 401k, it would have lowered your page one income, and you could have qualified for this $2,500 tax credit. So that's the kind of thing we want to look for in tax planning. We want to say, what credits might you qualify for? And sometimes it's just that people don't even know these credits exist. So we have foreign tax credits, as I mentioned, the education credits, child tax credit, dependent care credit. There's all these different credits that are tied in some way to your income. And if we watch what your income is on page one of your return, in whatever way that we can do that, just be smart about it. That also goes into the multi-year planning. So the multi-year planning factors in those years your kids are in college or those years your kids are in daycare. You want to make sure that you're qualifying for these credits to the extent you can. Another deduction, not a credit, but a deduction, which I forgot to mention, was the health savings account. When I look at a W-2 and I see the code W that tells me someone's put money into a health savings account through their employer plan, which I love. If you have a high deductible health plan, you qualify for a health savings account. I love seeing that. We have to determine if you have a family plan or an individual plan. But I look for the caps, the limits on that. So let's just ballpark family, about 7,100, single, about 3,600. I'm just ballparking these numbers. If I see that you've only done through your employer maybe $1,000 into the health savings account and you have plenty of money in the bank, we always have to, you know, make sure that you've got all your other bases covered in overall planning. We want to say, hey, is there any way you can afford to put more money in the health savings account? Because we have until April 15th of the following tax year to put money in. If we miss doing it through our employer, which is the number one best way to do it, because you save federal tax, state tax, local tax, Social Security tax, Medicare tax. If I do it on your tax return, we can save fed and state, but we're not saving local and we're not saving, the payroll taxes. So if there's a way to do it through your employer plan, you want to do that. If you find, whoops, I missed it, I didn't do it, Lori, what am I going to do? Well, you can do it through April 15th and take that deduction on your tax return and save a lot of money. We've done a lot with people who've missed it. And then when they do really, really well and during open enrollment, they sign up for, their health savings account and they max it out. That is really good. And then the next year I look at their W-2 and I see that they did a really good job and they're saving the most taxes that way. Again, you have to make sure your cash flow allows for all of that. But the health savings account then is used for medical expenses, and you can take that with you if you leave your employer. It's different than a flexible spending account. So if you can get a high deductible plan and you can afford a high deductible health plan, because the premiums might be lower, but you do have a higher deductible. So there's a lot of different things you have to weigh, but it does allow for a little planning on the tax return. So we've talked about planning for the tax brackets that you might be in now, planning for the tax brackets you might be in the future, planning, doing your tax planning around retirement and what kind of retirement accounts are available to you while you're young, while you're older, maybe even when you retire, when we're looking at tax brackets for IRA distributions, required minimum distributions. Required minimum distributions aren't until age 72 now, so they've pushed that out a little bit further. But that might give you a longer window to do things like IRA conversions. And planning for that survivor, whether it's your spouse or your children, if indeed that's what you want to do. And your IRAs could be going to charity. I have people who have their IRAs going 100% to charity. Well, then maybe you don't need to do a conversion at all. Because if your IRAs are all going to charity, there's no income tax to the charity. And that's a wonderful thing. And so maybe it just doesn't make sense for you to do a Roth conversion. So you want to, play that out too. And as I mentioned, make sure you're considering anything that falls to a circular calculation. Circular calculation of taxing Social Security or taxing maybe your long-term capital gains, what might have been at zero if you're in a 12% bracket or lower, or even the 15% bracket, just kind of taking advantage of those things. So folks, I hope that I was able to maybe take the fear out of the tax return a little bit. I think you just kind of have to talk to yourself and convince yourself that it's all going to be okay, and that it benefits you by kind of embracing those fears and getting familiar with your tax return so that you can do some good planning for yourself and the people around you if needed. Next week will be Thanksgiving on Thursday, so we will run a pre-recorded show on Wednesday. So we hope you will enjoy that, and we'll be back the following Wednesday on December 1st. Coming up next, we have Norm Williams filling in for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music, so we hope you stay tuned for that. I want to thank Kyle for being here. Sorry we didn't have any calls tonight. And James Johnson, thank you for being here. And as usual, folks, you can send questions that you maybe didn't want to ask on air tonight through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, and I'll do my best to answer those. I'm pretty good about getting back to people, so if for any reason you don't hear back from me, you're welcome to shoot me an email as well. Remember, though, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.